Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today on our weekly roundtable, tensions with North Korea and the U.S. are at an all-time high, with Trump sending an armada to the waters off the Korean Peninsula and threatening to carry out a preemptive strike against North Korea. And North Korea, in turn, threatening either a preemptive strike against the U.S. or U.S. allies, or a nuclear strike in retaliation. China, meanwhile, is trying to calm the waters, joining South Korea and Japan in requesting that the United States work to resolve the crisis by peaceful means. Some are wondering if the Trump recent military strike against a Syrian government military facility and the dropping of the largest bomb ever used in a military operation in Afghanistan is part of the emerging Trump doctrine, sending messages to North Korea, Russia, and Iran, and indeed the world. Do what Trump wants or face the military might of what Trump is now calling his military. What is going on with the U.S.-China relations, given Trump's public effort to shift his bromance from Putin to China's President Xi? Meanwhile, Russia, Syria, and Iran are demanding no further military strikes on Syria by the United States, and Russia is insisting on a UN investigation into the charge of chemical weapons being used in Syria and by whom. Meanwhile, Assad continues to defend his government, saying that videos of dead children as a result of a chemical attack are fake. And in the United States, Trump steps up his crackdown on immigrants, creating an army of at least 50,000, including ICE agents and those patrolling the border, as Jeff Sessions traveled to the U.S. border to further threaten immigrants. And how are movements responding to all of this, Trump's latest moves? Our panelists are Jackie Goldberg, Laura Carlson, and Dr. Gerald Horn. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. The top U.S. military official in Afghanistan says the attack on a tunnel complex in remote eastern Afghanistan, with the largest non-nuclear weapon ever used in combat by the U.S. military, was a tactical decision. General John Nicholson spoke at a press conference at which the U.S. military also released video of the attack.
This was the right weapon against the right target. I want to assure the people of Afghanistan that our forces take every possible precaution to prevent civilian casualties.
Afghan officials said the attack left 36 Islamic State fighters dead and caused no civilian casualties. The Guardian newspaper quoted a member of parliament who said locals told him one teacher and his young son were killed in the blast. The bomb is known as a MOAB, Massive Ordnance Air Blast Weapon. It's nicknamed the mother of all bombs and unleashes 11 tons of explosives. Pakistani villagers living 9 miles from the Afghan border said the explosion was so loud they thought a bomb had been dropped in their village. Former Afghan President Hamid Karzai said in a tweet, "I vehemently and in the strongest words condemn the dropping of the latest weapon." Karzai said, "This is not the war on terror, but the inhuman and most brutal misuse of our country as a testing ground for new and dangerous weapons." Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi said there would be no winners in an armed conflict between the U.S. and North Korea over the North's nuclear weapons and missile programs.
China has always resolutely opposed any moves that will increase or provoke tensions. History has proven that weapons cannot solve problems and that dialogue is the only way out. On the issue of the Korean Peninsula, it's not about who can say the most hateful words, about who can raise the biggest fist, who will win. Rather, once war breaks out, there will be losses on all sides and no one is the real winner.
Wang told reporters all sides must stop provoking and threatening each other in their words and actions and take a flexible approach to resuming dialogue. North Korea may carry out a nuclear or missile test in coming days to celebrate the 105th birthday of founding President Kim Il-sung. The North has been vowing a tough response to any military moves that might follow the U.S. decision to send the USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier and its battle group to waters off the Korean Peninsula. Some analysts suggest the U.S. military dropping of the Moab bomb in Afghanistan was meant by the Trump administration as a warning to North Korea. Russia, Syria, and Iran have strongly warned the U.S. against launching new strikes on Syria. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov hosted his Iranian and Syrian counterparts at a Moscow meeting. Lavrov repeated his call for an independent probe into the chemical weapons attack in Syria's Idlib province. His translated remarks appeared on Al Jazeera.
Independent experts from all sides, Russia, Europe, and the United States, have to take part in this investigation. If our American and European colleagues are convinced that their version is correct, they have nothing to be afraid of. Our wish is to make this investigation the most transparent so that nobody has any suspicions about the result.
Russia is calling for a separate probe into the U.S. attack on a Syrian airbase, which followed the chemical weapons attack in Idlib. Donald Trump's executive order to cut off funding to sanctuary cities faces a court challenge in San Francisco this morning. San Francisco and Santa Clara County are asking a federal judge for a preliminary injunction to bar the Trump administration from enforcing the order. The Department of Justice said in court documents the lawsuits are premature because decisions about withholding funds have yet to be made. It also stressed the order referred to grants, not all federal funding, and was consistent with existing government authority to revoke or deny such money. But San Francisco and Santa Clara County say the order is making it difficult for them to plan their budgets. San Francisco says the president does not have authority over federal funds and cannot force local officials to enforce federal immigration law. Two pharmaceutical companies have asked a federal judge to prevent Arkansas from using their drugs to execute seven inmates by the end of the month. Fresenius Kabi USA and Westward Pharmaceuticals say they object to their products being used for capital punishment. The two companies filed a friend of the court brief in a lawsuit by the inmates. Arkansas has set an unprecedented execution schedule set to begin Monday with the lethal injection of two death row inmates then. The pharmaceutical companies say in their brief, the use of the medicines in lethal injections runs counter to the manufacturer's mission to save and enhance patients' lives and carries with it not only a public health risk, but also reputational, fiscal, and legal risks. The executions are scheduled to occur before Arkansas' supply of the execution drug midazolam expires at the end of April. It's a sedative which has been used in botched executions in other states. I'm Eileen Alfandera. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And today is our weekly roundtable. I'd like to first welcome our panelists, Jackie Goldberg, who has served in the California State Assembly and on the Los Angeles City Council. Prior to that, she was a member of and later president of the Los Angeles School Board. She's currently on contract with the mayor of Los Angeles's office to help with his plan, Mayor Garcetti, called Service and Workforce Restoration, a program whose goals are to hire 5,000 permanent city employees by 2018 to restore service that was cut or curtailed by previous layoffs. She has been an educator all of her life. Jackie, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
And also, we'd like to welcome Laura Carlson, political analyst and writer based in Mexico. She has written extensively on NAFTA, the drug war, immigration and gender issues, and America's Updater, Counterpunch, Fortune, and others. She's a columnist for Huffington Post, Foreign Policy in Focus, and a commentator with CGTN, Democracy Now!, NPR, Al Jazeera, BBC, and Mexican television and radio stations. She has participated as an analyst and activist in the movement against militarization and the drug war on both sides of the border and is host of the Mexican television program Hecho en America. Laura, welcome.
Thank you, Margaret.
And Dr. Gerald Horn, the Morris Professor of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston. He's published more than 30 books, including Confronting Black Jacobins, the U.S., The Haitian Revolution and the Origins of the Dominican Republic, and Paul Robeson, The Artist as Revolutionary. At this year's 2017 National Council of Black Studies Conference, Dr. Horn was granted the Ida B. Wells and Sheikh Anta Diop Award for Outstanding Scholarship and Leadership in Africana Studies. Dr. Horn will be joining us in just a few minutes. So we're going to start off discussing the crisis now in North Korea, tensions between North Korea and the United States and in the entire region there are at an all-time high. Trump sending an armada to the waters off the Korean Peninsula and threatening to carry out a preemptive strike against North Korea, and North Korea in turn threatening either a preemptive strike against the U.S. or a nuclear strike in retaliation. There's a lot of nervousness in the region. China is trying to join South Korea and Japan in calming the waters and telling the U.S. to just back off a bit, resolve the crisis by peaceful means. Now, North Korea's Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs said in a recent interview with CBS News, quote, if the U.S. comes up with a dangerous military option, then the first card is in our hands. We'll deal with it with our preemptive strike. This means war. He also said in an interview with AP, Associated Press, that the Trump administration is, quote unquote, more vicious and more aggressive than the Obama administration. Meanwhile, a U.S. Navy strike group, including the USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier, is heading towards the Korean Peninsula. And on Friday, the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi said, quote, if a war occurs, the result is a situation in which everybody loses and there can be no winner. Now, North Korea has conducted 4 missile launches thus far, including tests of more advanced and possibly longer range technology. Their 6th nuclear test is expected soon. Experts say it could happen at any time. Rumors persist that this could happen the day of the sun, which is North Korea's biggest national holiday, as the country often uses such occasions as an opportunity to show off its military advances in hardware. Meanwhile, Mike Pence is expected to travel to South Korea on Sunday. His aides say it's a show of U.S. commitment to its ally country in the face of possible nuclear tests across the border. What we're going to do now is to get a little bit of the situation and analysis from a clip from Press TV.
So as the North Korean official has said and has blamed Trump for causing trouble and for heightened tension in the region, in the sensitive Korean Peninsula, it does seem that since taking office, Trump has really exacerbated the situation on the Korean Peninsula and heightened tensions there.
That's correct, but unfortunately, it's not all the story. I mean, North Korea continuing with its nuclear tests is a provocation not only to the United States, but also to China. In terms of Trump's behavior, yes, undoubtedly. I think the entire world agrees that no one is quite certain what he's going to do. His unpredictableness is the only thing you can predict about him.
And the U.S. has threatened that it might carry out a preemptive strike against North Korea. Is it really allowed to do that, to go ahead and carry out a preemptive strike against the North?
Well, I don't think it was technically allowed for them to do it against Syria recently. The fact that he has moved an armada that not only has one, but three additional Japanese Aegis destroyers equipped with the newest Aegis missiles, which are interballistic interceptors. The fact that he detonated the most powerful bomb that the United States has in Afghanistan this morning, and that he has said that he's willing to go it alone together with Syria, makes it very clear that this is a very, very dangerous situation, that he will probably act unilaterally if he is given the provocation of having a nuclear test detonated there.
How likely is it that Trump would go ahead and do what he has done, for instance, in Syria, as you just mentioned? Do you think he would take the risk and carry out an attack against North Korea? Because even Beijing has warned the U.S. against taking any military action against North Korea.
Not only Beijing, but Seoul and also Tokyo. All of them are concerned about a surprise unilateral move, especially in Seoul, where they believe that they are under direct threat from 11,000 pieces of heavy artillery, which could decimate the entire city in a matter of hours. So this is not being taken lightly. It's the reason that Xi Jinping called Donald Trump to stress that peaceful means are the preferred method. It is unclear, though, what he will do. What is clear is that this has changed the narrative for Donald Trump in Washington, D.C. Gone are the questions about involvement with Russia, the conflicts of interest of himself, his family, his failures on the domestic scene. All of these things have been thrown to the side as people try to figure out what his intentions are in North Korea.
Mr. Tangen, we have been seeing some unprecedented measures taken here. For instance, as we had, the U.S. has moved an aircraft carrier group, USS Carl Vinson, to the Korean Peninsula. We have seen the U.S. president threatening North Korea in unprecedented terms, talking of preemptive strikes and talking of tackling North Korean problem, as he said it, immediately. Do you think that the Korean Peninsula, that sensitive East Asia region, is really on the brink of a war, or is that just another case of heightened tensions in that sensitive region?
I wish it was that simple. I do believe that we are on the brink of an armed confrontation that will involve conventional weapons strikes against North Korea, not only at sites where the atomic missiles are done, but probably something very close to a decapitation strike against all positions, artillery and army positions, and including areas of Pyongyang where they believe that the leadership will be hiding.
All righty. And that was Press TV. And the interviewee is political analyst Einar Tangen. Now, Jackie Goldberg, first, just, of course, response to the analysis that you just heard. But let's bring in here also what happened in Afghanistan. Thursday night, the U.S. dropped the massive bomb known officially as GBU-43B on a tunnel complex in eastern Afghanistan, the largest non-nuclear weapon ever used in combat by the United States. It dropped 11 tons of explosives. And according to Afghanistan officials, the attack left 36 people who are said to be Islamic State fighters dead. And they are also saying no civilian casualties. And it is said to have destroyed several Islamic State caves and ammunition caches. So, Jackie Goldberg, we wonder what Trump is really doing here. I mean, the message that he is sending, not only to countries that the U.S. now is in immediate conflict with, but to other nations around the world. And what do you think this means for the narrative change for Trump, Jackie Goldberg?
The reality is that he is putting American soldiers in grave danger in both the Korean Peninsula, because we have thousands of troops in Japan and thousands of troops in South Korea. But he is also really provoking the possibility of a major crisis, particularly for South Korea. And that's why I think you're seeing the nations that are most likely to be affected are not the United States, but the nations that are within the ballistic range of North Korea already. And I think this kind of posturing of using large bomb and using all of this other stuff, he thinks that he can, I think the people advising him think that, Trump thinks that they can intimidate North Korea, they can intimidate Assad, they can intimidate Russia in a way militarily that will get results that Trump wants to be able to tout as advances in these areas. But I think what he's doing is bringing us closer to wars that will be devastating. Certainly, if the provocations of moving a fleet in from the United States has an effect on younger Kim, who's running the North Korean military with his advisors, they very well may do something stupid. And the United States may do something stupid. And the people who will be hurt all over the region. I think it's just catastrophic that they're playing these kinds of bully games. You know, this is the kind of stuff that endangers good parts of the world. And I think that it's really unbelievable that we don't have thousands of people in the streets in an anti-war movement around the world saying, cut this crap out. But I think it's beginning to build, but I think it's taking a while. And I'm really very, very, very nervous, both about the troubles with Russia, although I think mainly his troubles with Russia, Trump's troubles with Russia, are a phony. I think that what they're trying to do is to say, look, we weren't that friendly with Russia during the campaign. We didn't really do all that stuff. Look how mean we're being to Russia now. So I think that's all really phony. I don't think any of it is real. And I think the attacks that, you can tell by that, because Russia, immediately after Tillerson left, put back in place the use of communications between the United States and mm-hmm. Russia over where their planes are in Syria so that they don't accidentally end up fighting each other or hitting each other. So I think that a lot of this is for the press and for the world, but it's a dangerous, dangerous game, and it threatens literally millions of people and hosts of American troops whom he says he's so interested in protecting. I think he's putting in grave, grave danger.
Yeah, and Laura Carlson, I mean, a backdrop of all of this, as some are saying, is a kind of a regime change mode. Certainly now with Tillerson and Trump and Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador appointed by Trump, basically calling for regime change in Syria. I mean, nobody really seems to be looking at what happened in the past when the U.S. has involved itself in regime change in the region, Libya, you know, being a stark example, and Iraq being a stark example. I mean, there's still a quote-unquote mm-hmm. cleanup operation happening, you know, in Iraq. And in the region south of the border, when the U.S. moves on regime change, they sort of use different tactics, corrupt political things, elections, as happened recently in Haiti, stealing elections, or forcibly, you know, removing elected presidents from power, like in Honduras. But either way, the message that Trump seems to be reinforcing is that you don't do what the United States or Trump likes, and the U.S. is going to go after you, either militarily or by any means necessary. Laura Carlson, your take on all this.
That's exactly right. It's one of the biggest concerns. The whole situation, and taken together with the bombing in Syria, the just gigantic, obscene bomb dropped in Afghanistan on 36 people, and the threats and the tension now stirred up with North Korea are profoundly alarming and deeply sad. And one of the most alarming things about that is this idea that they're basically posturing, in a sense, using the lives of other people to send various messages and to deflect attention from rising criticisms and even legal challenges within the United States. Of course, I agree with Jackie and was looking at this the last couple of days, that the whole thing about now we're have the lowest level of trust in history, which of course is also completely a historical thing to say in terms of the reality of the situation with Russia is probably is false, and that there's a lot of evidence to say that. So what we have is we've got the Bush doctrine of preemptive strikes, but now in the hands of a person who does not think and a cabinet who does not think, which leads to your point about the fact that even if these terrible policies were carried out somehow according to their own logic successfully, that is to say that there was decapitation of the regime in South Korea with no plan for follow-up and the instability that that would cause in the region, not to mention the probability that there would be retaliation, not against the United States, but against major allies, especially Japan and South Korea, means that we would be looking at something way worse than a quagmire. We would be looking at permanent war and instability in all of these regions, potentially, as a result of even what is considered the successful outcome of these bombings, threats, and intimidation. So there's no possible positive outcome to this very macho posturing foreign policy that Trump has taken on. You could call it a Trump doctrine if there were any indication that there were coherence to it. But it, aside from, you know, aside from the violence, the extreme violence and use of over-the-top military equipment, it's highly unlikely that we're really going to see coherence in the sense of it being a world doctrine to reach a point of stability. So that's what these incidents have in common. It's absolutely terrifying that they've all come together now. It's something that we predicted, including on this program, that history has shown us that when there's a major attempt to challenge power within the state lashes out externally. And we've talked about the possibility of Trump's exit from his challenges at home being war. And now we've got war threatening on multiple fronts that's become such a distraction that everything else has been forgotten. I'm also surprised in many ways that there's been, and extremely disappointed, that there's been the level of support there has from other countries. Now with North Korea, of course, China and almost all the Asian countries are saying don't do it. But we haven't heard enough from any other allies saying you've got to back off right now, you know.
Yeah.
And in Syria there was quite a bit of support. In the United States there seems to be still, with so many issues coming together, not a paralysis, and there's certainly a lot of movement on the domestic issues, but on the foreign policy, there has not been a mobilization, and we still also have not seen that outside. We may see how things begin to shape up, yeah. But it's absolutely necessary that there be massive mobilizations to stop this extreme militarist and just crazy behavior.
Right, and Dr. Gerald Horn, who has now joined us. Dr. Horn, I mean, a lot of people are not familiar. In fact, I think we'll need to do more on this show, given the history of Korea itself. Many people may not know that the division of Korea between North and South Korea was the result of the Allied victory in World War II in 1945. But that prior to that, for 35 years, the Emperor of Japan was in charge of Korea, and that then the U.S. and what was then the Soviet Union occupied the country with the boundary between their zones of control along the 38th parallel. Then the Korean War that happened. I should also mention that in 1948, a pro-U.S. government was laid out in Seoul, and a pro-Soviet Union government was established in the North. And the 1950, the North launched a surprise attack on the South and quickly took most of the South. And then the Korean War broke out. By the time an armistice was signed in 1953, 2.5 million people had died. So this is some of the backdrop then about this division between North and South Korea. But Dr. Horn, just your take on this and also China's role. I mean, what do you think is going on with that, given the bashing that Trump did of China throughout the election? And now he seems to be shifting his quote-unquote bromance from Putin to China's President Xi, Dr. Horn.
Well, with regard to China, I think there might be a double game at play. That is to say, a game of hypocrisy with the United States and Mr. Trump speaking words of honey publicly with regard to China. But basically, ratcheting up tensions with North Korea is a way to put pressure on China. I would also say it's a way to put pressure on Japan as well and make Japan more ready to make concessions on trade and on the U.S. soldiers that are stationed in Japan and making Japan pay more for that, which Mr. Trump said he wanted to do in any case. I think that the United States has come to recognize that it made a bad deal when in the 1970s Mr. Nixon went to China. Supposedly that was a great deal because it led to the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, but has now put China in the passing lane. And the question for U.S. imperialism now is, how do you reverse that? Just like the attack on Syria was indirectly a way to send a message to Iran and also to Russia, this ratcheting up tensions with North Korea is a way to send a message to both China and Japan. It's also a way to send a message to the base of Mr. Trump. There's a lot of dissent within the base right now in light of Mr. Trump reversing positions on the Export-Import Bank, on sacking Janet Yellen, the head of the Federal Reserve, with regard to his now saying China is no longer a currency manipulator. But ratcheting up tensions abroad is a way to unite the Wall Street base of Mr. Trump, represented by Gary Cohn, who's part of the White House staff and, of course, is the former president of Goldman Sachs. And it's a way to help to mollify the Bannon base, the working class and middle class base of the Republican Party and the Trump coalition. There's nothing that unites the two wings of the Trump coalition than a war abroad. And that, it seems to me, helps to illuminate why, as soon as tomorrow, the 105th birthday of the founding father of North Korea, Kim Il-sung, you might have some sort of explosion, literally or figuratively.
I suppose, Dr. Horn, on the one hand, one could hope that a lot of this has to do with power plays and posturing and negotiation, but also we can't keep out of our mind the possibility that something crazy could happen and, you know, some kind of nuclear war could begin. Dr. Horn, is that just too far-fetched? I mean, we would hope that this wouldn't happen.
Well, let us hope and let us struggle to make sure it does not happen. But there are some very disturbing signs. For example, in the Washington Post, there are stories about how China supposedly is aiding the nuclear program of North Korea, while at the same time, supposedly it's playing its own double game by supposedly trying to talk to the leadership in Pyongyang, telling them not to go ahead with this nuclear development program. Likewise, there's reporting in the mainstream press that suggests that trade between North Korea and China is skyrocketing, going up by double digits compared to the same period of 2016. It seems to me that the ground is being prepared for a ratcheting up of tensions, although the consequences have not been thought through thoroughly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, on that note, we are going to pause here, and thank you for that, Dr. Horn, and take our station break. And when we return, we're going to continue our conversation with Jackie Goldberg, Laura Carlson, and Dr. Gerald Horn. We'll be talking a bit about Syria and also about Trump stepping up his crackdown on immigrants. We'll be right back. Great Marvin Gaye's Inner City Blues. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. You can check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org. By the way, we have a calendar on there with events that are coming up that you might be interested in participating in, and along with other news stories. And if you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. And today we would like to give a shout out to all of our SoundCloud listeners in the region of the Middle East. And it is our weekly roundtable, and our panelists are Jackie Goldberg, Laura Carlson, and Dr. Gerald Horn. And we are now going to turn our attention first a short bit on Syria, and then we'll be discussing the latest crackdown on immigrants. People are still trying to figure out about this military strike, a recent military strike against the Syrian government. Meanwhile, Russia, Syria, and Iran are demanding no further military strikes on Syria by the U.S., and Russia is insisting on a U.N. investigation into the charge of chemical weapons being used in Syria and by whom. And we know that Rex Tillerson returned from his meetings in Russia and apparently had to back down on a part of the ultimatum on Russia, and is continuing to cooperate with Russia in coordinating bombings going on in Syria. So it's very difficult to figure all this out. But meanwhile, Bashar al-Assad is continuing to defend his government, saying that the videos of dead children as a result of chemical attack are fake. Let's just hear a short clip now of Assad making his case.
We don't have arsenal. We're not going to use it. And you have many indications if you don't have proof, because no one has concrete information or evidence. There was no order to make any attack. We don't have any chemical weapons. We gave up our arsenals a few years ago. Even if we have them, we wouldn't use them. And we had never used our chemical arsenal in our history. Our impression that the West, mainly the United States, is hand in glove with the terrorists. They fabricated the whole story in order to have a pretext for the attack. The United States and the West, they're not serious in fighting the terrorists. And yesterday, some of their statements were defending ISIS. They were saying that ISIS doesn't have chemical weapons. So actually, you cannot talk about partnership between us, who work against the terrorists and who fight the terrorism, and the others who are supporting explicitly the terrorists.
And Jackie Goldberg, you know, starting with you here, whatever, and by all reports, of course, you know, I, for one, have gotten to the point of being so skeptical of the mainstream media that you don't know what to believe and what not to believe in terms of what comes out of their mouth, right? But certainly we do know that at the during the Arab Spring, protests did also spread to Syria from those who were protesting against the Assad regime and wanted change and were going about it peacefully. And that very, very quickly, within about 6 months, turned into a proxy war with ISIS. You know, Phyllis Bennis has said that there are likely scores of proxy wars going on. I can't recall now the number of proxy wars going on in Syria, but the whatever criticisms they are of Bashar al-Assad, he is, one of his enemies is ISIS and other groups of his ilk. So it's a very complex situation then that the United States is finding itself in, and Bashar, and giving room for Bashar al-Assad to say that the United States is defending ISIS by claiming that ISIS, no, doesn't have chemical weapons. And the U.S., meanwhile, reports have come out that they, a U.S.-led coalition, has actually, for the third time in a month, bombed its own coalition forces on the ground in Syria. Jackie Goldberg, your take on the situation in Syria.
Well, the situation in Syria is just a total disaster. There'll be almost nothing left of the country by the time there is ever, if there is ever a solution that stops the fighting. But I think the fact of the matter is that what's truly happening is that the attack by the United States on a airfield, which I don't think even put it out of business, was against international law, should not have occurred, should not be cheered on by the American media and the American people, because in fact it was an entirely internationally illegal act. And in addition to which, you know, if the United States were serious about doing something about the attack, which was just disaster in terms of using chemical weapons on its own people, it would have first gone to the United Nations and said, let's have an investigation and show that this for what it really was, which is the Assad regime using chemical weapons after it said it had destroyed all of them against a civilian population of its own people. Then you begin to talk about international sanctions increasing. You talk about things which might actually change Assad's behavior. But instead, what the United States chose to do was send, you know, some 49 or 59, I can't remember what they finally decided it was, Tomahawk missiles in. And to do that put us in the position of the United States of being a group that also violates international law at will, makes it much harder for us to make the arguments in the United Nations that we need to make. And I think it was a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake, and it was something that was done because the folks that work with Trump now want a bully and want to use our massive weapons as a way of saying to people, we're in charge of the world now. You better all back off and do what we say, or you have no idea what we'll do, because we don't have any idea what we're going to do either. And we'll make it up as we go along. And I think that's just the most dangerous things that we could be possibly doing. Certainly it endangered all the American troops that are in Syria, absolutely, and we've already seen one result. There was an immediate attack on a small base in which the Americans fled to the desert after this attack by the United States, and unfortunately left our allies, Syrian allies, vulnerable, and then the Americans had to come charging back to retake the place after many of our allied Syrian friends had died. And so what we're seeing is a policy which basically is designed to make the American public think that Trump is taking the advantage, taking the initiative, and trying to deal with the bad guys, the bad hombres, as he calls them, of the world, when in fact what he's doing is creating more bad hombres by increasing the ability of ISIS and others to say, look, look at what the Americans do. They violate international law to kill us. They do whatever they want to do. They're the problem, not us. And I think that this is a catastrophic policy, and it has to be stopped. We have to do whatever we can to stop this guy from seeing that he can use the massive American military might to literally be the bully of the world.
Yeah, which he's now calling his military. And before we go to you, Laura Carlson, looking at also the time, I have a short clip that we wanted to play about Jeff Sessions, who made a trip to the U.S. border basically to threaten immigrants and undocumented immigrants in particular. But the reason we'll do that is that all of this focus on Syria, on North Korea, et cetera, really taking away from what is going focus on what is happening on the domestic front, including this massive uptick of attacks on immigrants, but also all of these cuts that will devastate people who are impoverished and middle class people in the United States. And nobody's getting any information about it. So, Laura, we'll play that clip, and then you could give your comments on both Syria as well as this uptick of attacks on immigrants.
Criminal aliens and the coyotes and the document forgers seek to overthrow our lawful system of immigration. So let's stop here for a moment. When we talk about when we talk about MS-13 and the cartels, what do we mean? We mean international criminal organizations that turn cities and suburbs into war zones, that rape and kill innocent civilians, and who profit by smuggling poison and other human beings across our borders. Depravity and violence are their calling cards, including brutal machete attacks, even beheadings. They threaten the very integrity of our nations in our hemisphere. It is here on this sliver of land, on this border, where we first take our stand. It is a direct threat to our legal system and to our peace and prosperity.
Laura Carlson, he didn't use the word filth, he didn't say it, but it was in his printed comments referring to people who, undocumented people coming into the United States. And that was in the printed document that was handed out to the press, even though in his oral remarks, he left that particular phrase out. And according to two Homeland Security officials who spoke to the New York Times anonymously, new contracts for immigrant detention centers will have much less detail regulations. For example, there'll be no requirement for translation services. The old requirement that detainees' requests for medical care must be evaluated by a professional within 24 hours will be replaced by a more vague requirement that jails must have procedures on providing medical care, et cetera, a few things along those lines. And of course, a force of ICE agents and agents along the border. I mean, this is a declaration of war. And Laura, you've been part of a caravan that's been bringing some attention to this.
That's right. Now, this declaration of Sessions was, he's a known racist. He's had problems before because of public declarations. And he stood there and said, this is the border is where we'll take our stand, as you quoted, and it's a direct threat to our legal system. He's talking about part of the United States, that a region of the United States is a direct threat to our legal system. And because of undocumented immigrants who have never been shown to be present any type of national security threat to the United States. What they're doing there is creating a state of siege, a state of exception on the border, with stripping the rights of not only immigrants and undocumented unauthorized border crossers, but also of the residents of the border region. There's been a doubling of inspections of all electronic devices. There's an order, the series of orders that are coming through are essentially creating a police state on the border where basic civil rights have been suspended. One of the things that's happened too is there's a whole media kind of a propaganda campaign going on, which has to do with the kind of language that they're using, which is implicitly, because they can't do it explicitly, there's no evidence for it, relating undocumented immigrants with the cartels and with transnational criminals, ignoring the transnational crime that happens by U.S. citizens within the United States and focusing it all here as an outside contagion. So this is a direct way to feed into a racist environment that they've been building up since the campaign. And that border region, they've suspended rights to privacy, essentially, for a particular region of the country. There's a Homeland Security Progress Report, and they're talking about the expansion of the detention facilities. There's mandatory detention for anyone caught. There's the increase in agents of all types along the border. We've really never seen anything like this. And it would be hard to, find examples even in other places, even though immigrant crackdowns have become a characteristic of globalization, which has forced immigration throughout the world. So there have been responses to this on this caravan. We're on a caravan that's called the Caravan Against Fear. Because what we're seeing is not only are these very specific measures being implemented, and we're going to see this increase because they're just getting started, and it's very clear where they're going with this, but also just the very fact that this is the attitude now. Has anyone who's undocumented living in fear and is beginning to cause the separation of families and severe trauma throughout our communities.
Yeah.
So the caravan is going to, and talking about rights. We're seeing mobilizations at detention centers to protest the expansion. There's one at Richmond. And then yesterday in Los Angeles, 35 people from the faith community of different faiths were arrested at the Metropolitan Detention Center. Of course, many jails are being reoriented to take more and more immigrants as well. And they're protesting against the cooperation of ICE. California's been an interesting example for us because, in general, the state is really taking a stand against these federal policies. And we've actually seen a number of local and state officials coming out, like this lawsuit against the anti-sanctuary measures that are coming together with some of the organized citizenry to protest the Trump policies. But the Trump policies just get more and more radically anti-immigrant.
Right. And Dr. Horn, bringing you into this discussion, anything you might want to add about the Russia-Syria-U.S. situation, but also this uptick of attacks on immigrants. And just quickly, Dr. Horn, there's a big debate in the movement going on with the May 1st protests, with whether they should focus on attacks on immigrants, as it traditionally has across the nation over the past years, or should it be broadened out to a more general call to resist? You may or may not have a view on that, Dr. Horn. Final thoughts from you.
Well, first of all, with regard to Syria, Theodore Postol, the well-known MIT scientist, has been the latest to debunk the notion accepted by the mainstream press that it was the Damascus-based regime that unleashed chemical weapons in that military base in Syria. Mm. There have been a number of debunking episodes like that by Dr. Postol. Secondly, I mentioned previously that these wars helped to solidify the Trump base, now fragmenting. But keep in mind that many of the liberal hawks are also congratulating Mr. Trump for attacking Syria. And that has led an editorialist in the Wall Street Journal to say this morning that the concord between the liberal hawks like Chuck Schumer, the Senate minority leader from New York, and Mr. Trump opens the door for a tax deal and other kinds of deals that will obviously be inimical to our interests. I should also say, with regard to the immigrant question, Mr. Sessions, the attorney general, is engaged in a bait and switch. I mean, he's talking about narco gangs on the one hand, but actually his law enforcement measures are going after people who are overstaying their visas and undocumented workers. You are correct to suggest that part of what's in store by the U.S. authorities is to make life miserable for undocumented people so they, in the words of Mitt Romney, will self-deport. That is to say, to curb translation services, to limit suicide watches in jails where they are now being housed. And the overall project, it seems to me, is to collapse the distinction between civil offenses, such as overstaying your visa, and criminal offenses, such as being involved in a narco gang. And that has implications for those of us who do not happen to be undocumented immigrants. For example, an eviction, and evictions, of course, are skyrocketing in light of economic distress that's hitting this country. Eviction is a civil offense. But if the distinction between civil and criminal is collapsed, people who are being evicted can also be treated, in the worst case scenario, as criminals. And if we're not careful, that's the road down which we are now headed.
Right. And Dr. Horn, any quick comment? We have like 30 seconds on the May 1st protests that are coming up.
Well, I mean, either approach, it seems to me, is wholly acceptable. But I know that you're looking for signs of struggle and good news. And I would point to the congressional race in Wichita just this past week, where the Republican margin of victory slipped from the double digits to the single digits. Next Tuesday, there will be a congressional race in Georgia, the old House seat of Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price. That's a blood red district. It may flip blue. And then in the state of Texas, which is the heart and soul of the conservative surge, there is a possibility that Senator Ted Cruz of Texas will be facing more than one challenger. with chance of unseating him.
All righty. On that note, we're out of time. Thank you, Gerald Horn, Laura Carlson, and Jackie Goldberg. Today's show produced by Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team. Sherelle Withers, our intern, our assistant producer, Stephanie Case, and our engineer, Kiana Williams. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Go to our website to find out some activities happening in your area. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.